This is the Chip Franklin Show on KGO 810. You can now listen at home by simply saying, Alexa, play KGO 810. Now, here's Chip Franklin.
It seemed appropriate to let Chip have the occasional day off, so I'm Angie Quero, sitting in for him both today and this coming Friday. What kind of experience do you have during the holidays when we're praying to God for how thankful we are, and then beyond that, we're celebrating the birth of Christ? And I say we roughly, an awful lot of people, probably the majority of people. The Earthbound Parent is a book that tackles the difficulty of raising children with the more prosaic atheism. How and why to raise your little angels without religion. Author Richard Kahn Jr., he's on hand on the telephone right now. Richard, it's so good to talk to you again.
My pleasure as well, Angie, and happy Thanksgiving to you and to all your listeners. And also, like to pass along felicitaciones for, el día de acción de gracias for those listening who speak Spanish.
Oh, thank you for that. I appreciate that. So I know that this is the time of year where the whole concept of religion, our preference for religion within our communities is prominent. Is that difficult for you as an atheist?
Well, no. I mean, by the way, the term atheism, is a bit complex. I probably would describe myself more as a non-theist, but the distinction isn't really all that important for most people. Mm-hmm. No, it's not difficult at all. I mean, my worldview and that of many who sort of see things the same way is that, we're delighted to celebrate the opportunities to get together with family and to recognize that there are traditions in society that we can be part of that have come down through the ages. Whether we agree with them being based on some supernatural construct or not, it really doesn't matter that much.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually intrigued by the difference between a non-theist and an atheist. So what distinction is that?
Well, maybe this way. I think I've told you the story of the magic blanket at one point when we chatted. And so if someone believes that the way to keep a child safe in life is by telling them that there's a magic blanket they can sleep under and be safe, which is the equivalent of sort of the idea of there being a God, a supernatural being. Some others might say that there is a magic pillowcase rather than a magic blanket. And there may be a thousand other scenarios like that that someone could come up with that would make a child feel better, or in other words, some type of a deity construct. And if you say you're an atheist, you're basically, discussing one of those many scenarios. And as a non-theist, the distinction is you're saying you're just not really a believer in any of the billions of different supernatural constructs one could come up with without evidence.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that your experience goes beyond just your own family. What do you hear from other parents who are trying to raise their children as non-theists?
It's interesting. I've had quite a bit of contact with parents through the years who are doing the same thing that we do. And it may be to some degree self-selecting in that I'm not hanging out, obviously, in churches or synagogues or mosques. But the experience, I think, of parents that I'm in touch with is extremely positive. They find they have no difficulty in passing along, of course, a strong sense of ethics and of critical thinking. They do as we do, which is they're not passing along any hostility of any sort towards people who wish to have a belief system based on the supernatural. So I don't see from other parents any problem in that. But again, these are people who are living in regions where there's not direct animosity towards people who are not part of these religious organizations. If you were to go to certain parts of the United States or other countries, particularly in the Middle East, obviously, people need to be more cautious and thoughtful about stepping out in a direction different than the societal norms.
Talking to Richard Kahn, the book, The Earthbound Parent, I want to open the phone lines up for you at 808-810-8080-810. Your own experience with either being around non-theists and your own impression of those, particularly if you do believe in a celestial being. How does that play with you, and what are your thoughts about raising a child not to believe in religion and how to make that easier for them. As Richard notes, that's going to be a different experience in different parts of the country. 8080810. And as you hear him referring to our earlier conversation, he was a guest on my show, In Deep with Angie Cuero. You can hear our entire conversation at indeepradio.com. Richard, I'm intrigued with your experience raising your own children because it seems to be, and I know they're not youngsters anymore, but it seemed to be so seamless, so easy. And I guess that I anticipated that with so much primarily Christianity, but beyond that, so much religion around, that it would be a lot more conflicted for them, but it wasn't.
No, it wasn't at all. The topic virtually never came up. I mean, the children have very active fantasy lives, obviously, in a sense of believing in all sorts of play mates, in, you know, as they're growing up, or the Easter Bunny, or Santa Claus, whatever they wish. But we never had a discussion in our family about there being some sort of supernatural force that is watching them, or and we certainly didn't use that for punishment or for controlling them in any way. We taught them ethics the way all parents do, which is by saying no to them when they misbehaved and by praising them when they were doing things that we thought were proper. So, and then in terms of the interaction with others in the community, young children typically are not attacked, at least in the Northeast where we live, for not participating in an organized religion. Mm-hmm. So it really has been a really total non-issue for them. And they're busy with all their after-school activities and having, you know, active lives. So it's not something that comes up. But we also avoid, Angie, you know, exposing them directly to, say, television shows that are promulgating religion and such. So what we would view sort of as propaganda that's out there, and instead give them more of a secular type of an education.
Are you worried that they're vulnerable to that?
No, not particularly. You know, as they get older, certainly if they wish to learn more about it, I mean, they're aware that there are religions. We don't hide from them that there are plenty of people who believe in a supernatural being with different names associated with them. And that these involve their historic tradition. So they're aware of that. And when they reach an age where they're able to think critically for themselves, perhaps the age where they would choose between, one party versus another politically, or as the joke I use in the book, between the Keynesian School of Economics and the Chicago School, when they reach a stage where they can intelligently choose for themselves whether they actually want to be part of a religion, that's when, you know, they can make that choice. We don't expose them to one, you know, during their early years and essentially brainwash them into accepting that concept. But as they get older, if one of my children decided that they wanted to adhere to some religion or another, that would be their choice. I cannot imagine, though, why they would do that as adults, mm-hmm. since they have a construct of life that allows them to approach, you know, without fear, whether it's their mortality or any other fears that most people suffer from or desires. They don't need the supernatural to deal with that.
In fact, I do want to talk about the fear of death in just a moment, but I do want to go to the phones as promised. 8080810 to talk to Richard Kahn about his book, The Earthbound Parent. Tom in Scotts Valley is on the line. Hi, Tom.
Hi there. I was wondering how your guest felt about the more militant atheists that seem to make it their life's work to punish people who might have a belief in God. For instance, getting a football coach fired for letting his players pray on the field.
Where did that happen, Tom?
Oh, it's I can't name a city or a state, but it's happened a lot.
Okay, I wasn't familiar with that. Richard, your thoughts?
Yeah, I've heard bits about what you might refer to, and thank you for that question about militant atheism. Yeah, I'm not a big proponent of being hostile towards people who think differently than I do. And my main point is that the supernatural construct is unnecessary, and therefore, you know, I'm arguing to parents that you can raise your kids without it and do just fine. But as to standing up for atheism, the only area where I would view that as appropriate is, for example, in separation of church and state, you know, where we do have a legal structure in our country that is designed to do that. In fact, that was a big part of what Thanksgiving is actually about, the migration from England to the United States to escape from being forced to follow any one religion or any religion at all. And so I think that if there's case law that comes down where people are going after a coach because they're foisting upon children the idea that, you know, religion should be part of a school experience, I could understand that. But I would much rather see people just talk the issue through and try to avoid, you know, the courts and situations like that where somebody's livelihood is determined by it. Hopefully the coach would understand that there are parents who prefer not to have prayer, you know, for their children.
Tom? Oh, I think we lost Tom there. Oh, we're going to go on to another caller in just a moment. 80-80.
Okay, well, I hope that was responsive to you, Tom.
I hope it was to him, too. And somehow we lost him on the follow-up there. But we'll take your other calls at 80-80-810, 80-80-810. Richard, we all have, to some extent, a fear of death. And I think there's a lot of resonance with people and a lot of comfort with people to have the idea that somebody is waiting for them, somebody's going to guide them through the experience, and that they won't be alone in it all, and there's somewhere to go afterward. So how do you tackle those ideas with a child?
Yeah, this is, to me, arguably the most important point that I try to get across in the book, which it's among many others. This is not a new issue. The fear of, first, it's important to recognize that we all have many fears. We're all in this together. We're afraid of death. We're afraid of loss of control. We're afraid of the unknown, lots of these things. And so the development of religion really is in large part explained by our need to have some sense of security to deal with these fears. And certainly a belief in a supernatural is one way to do that. But, you know, here's an easy way to think of it. I'll just take the one you gave as the example, and I will tell a story, which is true, of my daughter when she was five. And she asked me, she was falling asleep one night, you know, she basically said, "What happens after I die? I'm really afraid." And I think most parents experience that at some stage from their children.
Yes.
And that's the moment where there is that choice that you have. Are you going to give your child an answer that's basically real and based on your understanding of reality? Or are you going to do what, frankly, most people do, which is take sort of a cheap and easy way out and go with something supernatural? And I use that example at the beginning of the magic blanket. You know, honey, don't worry. You know, you're sleeping under the magic blanket. Nothing can harm you.
Mm.
Or, you know, the pillowcase, that's magic. You'll be fine. Or to take that to the, you know, obviously I'm using that as an example of the supernatural. You could instead say, don't worry. There is a God above you who's a father figure, sort of like me. And he will take care of you forever, and you'll never die. That's the other aspect of it. You know, you don't have to worry about dying.
Right.
The problem with that is you do create a situation where you're avoiding reality. And there is an answer that I gave my child, which resulted in her thinking about it for about a minute, going to sleep, and never raising the subject again over the last, I would say now, 5 years. It's not come up again. And none of my children ever raised it again. I've raised two that are now grown, and I have the two young ones. And it was simply 12 words. And if you say these 12 words to a child, I really have to bet you. I'd place a good bet on this, maybe just a penny, because I don't want to, you know, with all the viewers, I don't want to lose too much, that they would be perfectly satisfied with the answer. And those 12 words are, "It will be just the way it was before you were born."
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about those words, I've yet to meet anybody who did not find that to be a very helpful way of thinking of it. Because it doesn't put you in the position of having to explain where we were or whether we were before we were born and to have, you know, some idea of some constant existence. But most people would say to themselves, you know, I was fine before I was born. And if that's the state I'm going to be in afterward, well, that's okay, too.
That's Yeah, there's no fear associated with that. I mean, you weren't scared before.
There's
you were
no
born.
Fear, correct. Mm-hmm. And it's just an example of how, if you try as a parent, or just in your own philosophy as a person, you can deal with fears in your life without, you know, taking what I will call sort of the, to a degree, a cowardly approach of sort of saying, you know, I'm not going to address my fears. I'm just going to say that, you know, I've got somebody watching and these things are not real. I'll never die, for example.
I want to be fair about that as we go into the break. And, yeah. And Richard, you can address this afterward. But my thought is that in a lot of cases, we're not talking cowardly. We're talking about honest belief. And I'll get your answer for that as soon as we take a quick break here. And we'll take more of your calls at 888-810-8080-810. I'm Angie Coro. This is the Chip Franklin Show.
The Chip Franklin Show continues. Listen at home by saying Google Play KGO 810.
Chip Franklin Show. I'm Angie Clare, sitting in here on KGO, talking to Richard Kahn Jr. The Earthbound Parent is the book in question. Richard, I wanted to open up the question to you earlier because you referred to it as being something of a cowardly act to try to tell kids something about, you know, the magic blanket, the soothing sort of thing. And I just wanted to point out that there are people who aren't engaging in cowardice. They're simply passing on their genuine beliefs.
Let me explain what I mean by that.
Yeah, please.
I see religion is largely making use of people's strong survival instinct to provide a story which deprives them of the courage of taking on reality, namely the fact that we are going to die. All those, you know, that we know and love will pass away as well. And it's in that sense that I mean that it's allowing people or conveying to them a narrative that is not one that allows them to face life in a courageous manner. I'm not saying that people don't have good reason or don't genuinely believe the stories that they've been told by their parents and grandparents. These are all people that love them very much and believe they're passing along to them a very positive narrative that, you know, conveys both a history, some tribal aspects, as well as an ethical code. I am saying in the book that you don't need that. It's not necessary to get those other elements, particularly the ethical element. But I do think, Angie, that, you know, not facing reality is not allowing yourself to be courageous in life and dealing with the fears that we all naturally have. And that's what I mean by the comment.
Thank you for the clarification. I appreciate it. All right, let's talk about the reception that the book is getting. And as you said, there are some areas in America where it's easier to be an atheist or a non-theist than others. But a book, of course, goes all over the country. So I'm wondering what kind of response you've gotten.
It's been very positive. I think, again, because I'm taking the approach that the psychological elements of fears and desires are things we share, I'm certainly not being critical of people who are embracing these historic narratives, these mythologies. This is very difficult for people to come up with an alternative to because it's been passed down generation from, you know, to generation. And until 160 years ago with On the Origin of the Species by Darwin, we had no other explanation for how we were even here on the planet. And so it's natural that these things have a life of their own. They keep getting passed along. Generally speaking, the reception has been very positive, even though the subject is extremely controversial. But it is in large part, I think, because I do not see people who embrace religion as being foolish or stupid. It's nothing like that at all. I think it's a natural thing for people to want to deal with these fears and to address their desires. And religion clearly does that. In my view, it's a narrative, as I said, that's not necessary. And that is, frankly, in my view, a less attractive option that you can provide, certainly to children or even as your own philosophy. Mm-hmm. But it's up to, you know, each individual to choose whether they want to address those fears and desires with these stories or not.
Richard, thank you so much. It's really good to talk to you again, and I'm glad you were free to do it.
Always a pleasure, Angie. Thanks very much. And again, happy holidays.
And to you. Richard Kahn Jr., the book is called The Earthbound Parent, How and Why to Raise Your Little Angels Without Religion. Let's get some news. We'll get some traffic. We'll get some messaging done. And then we'll come back here with tickets to Black Crow here on KGO 810.